You're listening to a production of the Center for Emerging Media. We hope you'll consider making a donation to us to help us continue to bring you these podcasts. Just go to our website and click on Donate. Thank you. I'm talking with Thomas McCarthy, who played the character of Scott Templeton in The Wire, but he also wrote and directed The Station Agent and wrote and directed this more recent movie called The Visitor, which we saw the other week, which is now playing here in Baltimore, if you're listening from Baltimore. So you have a chance to hear it after you see this movie, after you hear this interview, which you should do. And Tom, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks. Great to be here.
So, let's start with the movie, and we can talk a bit about maybe The Wire later on. But your character in The Wire was this ostensibly despicable kind of guy.
We like to call him morally challenged.
That's good. Winning the Pulitzer for no good reason, but
I was walking my dog through Soho the other day, and a guy pulled up a Verizon truck, a repairman, and just slowly rolled down his window and looked at me and goes, "You're a bad man." And I thought, I think I know what he's talking about. And he's like, "You're a liar, aren't you?" And I knew what he was talking about.
That's great.
Everybody else in the corner was looking at me like, "Why is the Verizon guy picking on that poor dude?" But it was pretty funny. And then he started laughing. He's like, "I love that show." He's a really nice guy, actually. But it was a pretty funny intro.
That's very funny. So, The Visitor.
Yeah.
Describing it, what rather me do it, why don't you describe a minute what this movie is for the folks who have not seen it yet before we dive into some of the nuances of it?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. As with my last film, The Station Agent, I have yet to come down with the perfect one line of the movie. and I think that's probably indicative not only of the movies I make, but the movies I like. Sometimes the movies I like just, the plot kind of goes in places you don't expect, even if it's in a very simple way. But they're harder to sort of break down as opposed to, you know, it's a cop movie or it's this or it's that. But basically, this deals with this sort of aging teacher, professor at a small college who comes down to New York and has a run-in with a couple of young people who are living in his apartment. He's not expecting them to be there. It's a place that he doesn't use very often, and they thought they had legally subletted the place. It's a young Syrian guy, musician, and the Senegalese, this African woman who's a jewelry designer, just two young artists, a couple. And he, after their first rather awkward and kind of exciting introduction, they become friends, and the story unfolds from there about how they kind of all affect each other's lives. And then sooner or later we get into some of the questions about immigration and detention that are happening around the country right now. And the story unfolds from there.
Where's Tariq?
He was arrested.
What?
Yes. In the subway.
Arrested?
It was just a misunderstanding. They said he'd be released later tonight.
How could this happen? He knows better. He wouldn't do anything wrong.
No, he didn't. He didn't. I'm sure it'll be okay.
No, it won't be okay.
No, I went down to the precinct and made a statement.
That doesn't matter. We are illegal. We are not citizens. And when they find out, they're going to... Excuse me.
I wonder, but both with this movie and The Visitor, both with The Visitor and your former movie, The Station Agent, you leap into worlds that don't seem to be your worlds. I mean, you're not a 62-year-old... frustrated economics professor. You're not a young Syrian immigrant or his beautiful mother, or you're not, and you're not the Senegalese woman who's in her 20s.
Yeah.
I mean, how you put yourself, I mean, as actors put themselves in a lot of places they never have been, but you're also now doing this as a writer and director.
Right. It is. It's something that, you know, I don't take on lightly. In fact, I think whenever you're writing from someone who's a different age, a different sex, a different race, a different nationality, there comes with that a certain amount of responsibility that you hope when the audience sees it that can relate directly to that character, that they get it and that they believe it's authentic. And that's something as a writer, if you're a responsible writer, I think you take very seriously, because those are, you know, you want all those people to believe in the world of the movie. And part of that comes with me really taking my time with the script and sort of delving into different, whether it's communities or occupations or experiences, say, spending a lot of time in the Arab community in New York, or spending a lot of time specifically in, like, African immigrant community in New York and Harlem and the Bronx, and just talking and listening to people, getting to know people, and then slowly developing the script. And then a big part of it has to do with when I bring my actors on, I try to cast the actors as close and authentically to the role as possible, and then rely on them to complete the sketch of the character, really, to make that character fully realized, realistic, authentic as possible. And, you know, it's something we worry about right through the shooting process. It's something we spend a lot of time and attention and detail focusing on.
So what is in Staten Island?
I don't know. We would just go there and then come back. We never got off.
Why?
It was free. It felt like we were going somewhere. Oh, that's where the Twin Towers were. I never saw them, but correctly. Oh, and there's the statue. And behind that is Ellis Island. Sometimes Tarek would point at the statue and jump up and down like we are arriving in New York for the first time. It was very funny.
But in this film, I mean, in The Visitor, you... There's a couple things I want to ask you about, because many things struck me as I was watching this movie. One was that you have these characters who come from very culturally different places. A white guy from Connecticut and the university, and this Palestinian Syrian family, mother and son, and a young Senegalese woman. And it's the way you address and but don't address the issue of race and all the subtleties of that, and what was going through your mind with the subtleties of that, and the subtleties of the prison guards where they took Tarek, this young Syrian man, when he was arrested for trying to get through a turnstile, and put him into a detention center because he was an undocumented immigrant into America. And the prison guards' personnel were all black. And this, it just the juxtaposition of race in this movie was very interesting because of the way you did it, and it subtly, I think.
Right. You know, it's something that I think when you're writing, a lot of, like I said, is based on research, is based on facilities, is going and saying, okay, well, let's take, for instance, a detention facility. What are these places? Many of them are privately run. They're farmed out by the government. And they're basically privately run institutions set in the community, whatever community that, specifically in Queens and Elizabeth, New Jersey. And then where do they draw their labor from? Well, I was visiting these places for a year, and primarily they were local people. You know, it's like a minimum wage job, basically, you know. And I think, you know, we go to great pains in the movie to say, hey, the guards here aren't the problem. These are mostly just men and women working daily, working to make a living, you know, and, and this is the job that's offered. It's bigger than that. So I think it's really just trying to remain as honest to my personal experience with people and with relationships. And it was funny. I did a screening one time somewhere in the country, because we've been traveling on, now that the film's rolling out wide, we've been traveling all over the country doing screenings. And someone walked up to me afterwards and said, you know, I thought it was really interesting. Why did you choose to make that a, you know, make the boyfriend Syrian and the woman African, it's cross-cultural kind of thing? And, it didn't even dawn on me. I was like, what do you mean? Of course this guy would be with this woman. Look at her, and he's not bad-looking either, and he's a musician, and she's an artist. And like, I guess, that, you know, it was funny, because with all the other elements of the story that I really had to think out, that to me was just so natural, such a natural connection. And it's just funny, depending on where you are and what your personal and life experience is, some things, you know, some things seem more improbable or probable than others. And I think, especially living in New York right now, I mean, it's just, you know, it's such a crazy, crazy, wonderful mix of people and cultures. And, you know, it's like, for instance, you go to the street fairs. She designs jewelry and sells it in these fairs. And I spent a lot of time in these fairs. And, I mean, these fairs are babble. It's amazing. It is every language, every nationality, everything in these small street fairs. Because there's a lot of young artists who come here, can't get papers to work properly, so they sell the art they make. And it's everything from T-shirts to jewelry to hats to wallets to whatever they're making. And they're pretty extraordinary places. You know, they're pretty representative of just what a melting pot New York can be at times. It's pretty cool.
Hi, Walter.
Hi. Her stuff is great, right?
Beautiful.
She made me this.
Very nice.
So Walter and I are going up to the park to play for a little bit, okay?
Tarek, remember I told you we have to pick up my new table today? He said he'll only hold it for today.
Oh, I know, no problem.
Tarek, you always say no problem, and then you are late or you forget.
I know. I will not be long. We'll go up and play, and then we'll come back then. Promise, Habibti.
It's always Habibti when you want your way, huh? Goodbye.
Bye.
It closes at 5 p.m., Tarek. No Arab time.
No, not Arab time. Real time, Habibti.
And a couple of things about this film, I mean, that really hit me were that, again, I don't know whether the word to use other than what I used a moment ago, which was the subtlety of it, whether it was not beating people over the head with the private corporatization of prisons, just having the name up there, or the fact that the only oppositional force, which was, in a sense, the American government and its laws and this prison, were unseen. They were like the invisible force that we're kind of in the middle of everybody's life here.
Yeah. Well, again, I think that is indicative of a lot of problems, whether you're getting a parking, you know, ticket and you don't know who to yell at, or you're getting, you know, you can't get through to a credit card company or your cable company, or many instances, your government. And there's something very disempowering about the process and dehumanizing about it. And it can be, I think that's something in the film that everyone relates to, is like you don't even know where to turn, who to yell at, who to act out against, who to seek help from. And I think especially right now in the world of immigration, it is such a complex time and period in our country in terms of that. And the legal process is just terribly, terribly confusing. And to see people who come here who don't even have a great command of the English language trying to understand and navigate this, it's pretty harrowing, just on a really simple personal level. And to think even further that a lot of people who are in these detention centers don't have any sort of legal representation is even scarier. Yep. That these guys are trying, these men and women are put away in these places, and they don't have any access to the outside world or any access to legal help. And it's one of those things you kind of look at and you think, well, this is something, immigration's a tricky question, but maybe this is something we can do better.
Yeah, there was an article on the front page of the Washington Post just the other day, I think it was Sunday even, maybe.
Yeah.
About the people dying in custody.
Yeah, 60 Minutes did a piece on it. Or Nina Bernstein did a couple pieces in the New York Times, and editorials followed. So it's interesting, you know, the movie came out about 5 weeks ago, and there has just been a slew of and I don't think it's related to the movie, I think it's one of those zeitgeist moments where, you know, immigration reform has been happening so quickly over the last 10 years, and I think finally the public's starting to catch up with, okay, this is, you know, we had to do something to sort of deal with this, but what are the results? What are the human results? And I think, you know, this movie, that's probably as political as it gets. It doesn't try to tear down the system or just point fingers, but rather it just says, do we all know this is happening, and is this how we would want it run in our name?
Mm-hmm.
And I know just traveling around, a lot of people don't have any idea about these detention centers, these sort of modern-day internment camps, which are kind of tucked away in all our towns and cities. It's interesting to hear people's response once they see the movie and sort of just subtly say, is that really what's happening?
This is not fair. I am not a criminal. I have committed no crime. What do they think? I'm a terrorist? There are no terrorists in here. The terrorists have money, they have support. This is just not fair.
I know.
How do you know? You're out there.
I'm sorry.
Sitting here at night, and I keep thinking about Zainab. I just want to live my life and play my music. What's so wrong about that?
I think people do not know. And the other part of it is, I think, is, and whether it's this movie or other things you've done, is the way you approach human beings. I mean, there's a gentleness to this movie. I mean, it's very poignant, and it's in many ways very painful, and on some levels,
right,
especially towards the end. But the humanness of these characters and their relationship is also something that you don't see often. We don't get a chance to explore the human spirit that way in most movies today, I think.
Yeah, I think some of that is twofold. One, taking the time to really set up the characters and then really trusting good actors. And I think both those things have to be in place for it to work. I mean, you know, to get back to what you started with, I think it's something David Simon and all those guys did so well on The Wire. You know, it's a real, talk about subtle and talk about character development, talk about patience, and the payoff. That's why, you know, after 5 years, people were, you know, devastated when that series ended, I think. I know a lot of friends mm-hmm. who went into Wire mourning after the last episode. and, you know, also the compassion you felt for characters on all sides of the situation and all sides of the stories, you know, and I think that comes with, it's really easy to vilify people, to use terms like illegal aliens and these terms that completely dehumanize people, but right. when you know somebody, when you can put a face to it, when you understand where that person's come from and get a little bit of sense of walking in their shoes, just even the slightest sense, and of course that's impossible to do completely, but a slight sense of, wow, you know, they, you know, this is where they're coming from and this is what they've had to overcome to get here, and maybe we need to do a case-by-case sort of examination of people before we cast a wide net, you know. But I think that's, you know, certainly something I learned working on the show. I was a fan of The Wire for a long time before I joined it on the fifth season, and, you know, it's something I really pay those guys a lot of credit for. I think they're sort of masters at that.
Well, you know, it was, there were some other pieces in this where the blurring of the American flag was an interesting cinematic choice you made.
Yeah. Well, you know, I tell you, we shot in that international terminal of Newark, and, you know, like with a lot of films our size, we didn't have a huge budget, so it wasn't like we were buying the airport for a week, and we were getting to the point in the day where they were saying, okay, this international terminal is about to become very active. I was to the point where I kept grabbing people and saying, could you stand over here? And they looked at me like I was crazy, and I realized, oh, you're not an extra. You really are from Saudi Arabia. And we were having a lot of that trouble because people started showing up for flights and everything. But, you know, we went to shoot that final scene, or one of those final scenes, and then that flag was just, it's an enormous flag, and it's so prevalent in that situation. It was kind of one of those decisions my DP and I made on the spot of, like, we got to go up to that. It's just a perfect way to leave it. And I think it, you know, just sort of delicately asks the question, or sort of raises the question of, in whose name and how are we handling it? But, yeah, I was very happy with that moment, actually. That's a little bit of, you know, location luck, as it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Walter, I know you're a very smart man, but with the drama, you have to remember not to think. Thinking just screws it up, okay?
Okay.
Now give it a couple of bangs. Not so hard. You're not angry at it.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Better. Did you think?
No.
Good. Tuck, tuck, tuck. One, two, three. Come on, follow me. Tuck, 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 tuck. One, two, three. Don't worry. Start again. Good. Don't worry.
Now, how did you find these actors? I mean, Richard Jenkins, because people know him from 6 Feet Under, where he played the deceased father.
Yeah. You know, Richard's one of those guys who he's, you know, I traveling around the country, it's like people know him everywhere. And the you know, from, he's been in so many types of movies, from these really broad comedies, the Farrelly Brothers movies, to the, obviously a lot of the Coen Brothers movies, to so many things that people know him. And he's one of that guy, you know, oh my God, it's that guy. And mm-hmm. a lot of people hear the name and they're like, don't know him completely. But then they see him and they're like, oh yeah, I've seen him in, you know, so many things. And I really wanted a character, and again, it's similar to The Wire, right? I think one of the reasons The Wire was such an effective series is it used a lot of actors that had been working and were incredibly talented for many years, but weren't stars outright, you know, weren't like headliners. Right. And therefore, you're just seeing like wonderful actors at the top of their game, but you're not so familiar with them, you know, everything about their personal lives in real life. So you can really suspend disbelief and dive in with that character. And that's really what I was hoping to get from Richard, and I think it worked out for us. He's, you know, the guy has been working for so long. This, in essence, this is his first lead role in a movie.
That's interesting.
And, you know, you're getting a guy who's worked with so many other great actors and directors and writers that, getting a lot of bang for your buck with that actor, so to speak. So I wrote it with him in mind, and actually did the same thing with Hiam Abbas, who plays the mother, Muna. She's an actress, Palestinian actress out of Paris now, and had seen her in a lot of movies coming out of Europe and out of the Middle East, and just really felt like she was right for the story.
Walter, do you go to Broadway?
No, not really.
Tarek sent me the CD for the Phantom of the Opera for my birthday. I think I know every word.
Tarek is teaching me the drum.
Really? How is that going?
Well, I sound a lot better when he's playing with me.
She was she was perfect for the story. I mean, her.
Yeah.
Her ability, I know as an actor, to slide also between languages and cultures. She's really
it's a difficult role because she really doesn't enter the movie till almost halfway through, maybe a little less than that. But, you know, you need an actress that can come in and really grab the audience's hearts, and I think she does it. She has such integrity and power, and she's just, as a woman, and she's so beautiful. And original in that sense, but then she's just also a terrific actress, so she really understands what she had to do, and she did it very well.
Now, what about the other two? Is it Haz Sleiman?
Yeah, Haz Sleiman and Danai Gurira. Haz is from Lebanon originally, and I just found him. Those two, I just had to do casting, and we looked New York, L.A., London, Paris. Just did a wide casting call for Arab actors of that age and then for African actresses of that age. And it was very important to me that I had someone who, you know, really could connect with the character culturally. With Oz, he had a very similar journey, being from Lebanon, which, of course, a neighbor of Syria. He moved to Michigan and then to New York to pursue music, much like his character did. Mm-hmm. That was just a coincidence. And then with Danai, she's of Zimbabwe descent. She was born here but grew up in Zimbabwe, spent her life there, and then came back here to train at NYU at the acting school there. And both just like really wonderful, talented actors. And this is really for both of them their first major roles. And it was really exciting to kind of find these two actors who were so gung-ho and so right for the roles, and then pair them with these two older veteran actors who've done many, many movies. It's a really fun way to work. It keeps it really fresh, you know.
There was a lot of balance to this all the way around.
Definitely.
So how do you end up making a movie like this? I mean, how does somebody like you who really spent his time acting in a lot of different roles, looking at your filmography here, and come up with the ability to go out and make a station agent or The Visitor, because it takes some chutzpah, luck, and money to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, after I made The Station Agent, I had a little bit of, goodwill capital to play with, that mm-hmm. I think people were ready to trust me a little bit more, knowing that the stories I told were a little less, I don't know what the word is, maybe conventional.
Mm-hmm.
Had a little bit of a different way of telling the story. So I think, you know, making that first movie and having it do well really helped a lot. And then, you know, obviously I didn't rush. There was 4 years between the two movies, so it's not like I'm cranking them out or anything. It takes me a while to kind of get to the story. I wish I was a more prolific writer at times. But the good side is it gave me some years to really kind of reflect on what I wanted to do and also to do a bunch of acting. And you know, I had just shot The Visitor, just finished shooting it, and was starting the editing process when David called and asked about The Wire. And he was in London at the time, I think, and just said, you know, he remembered me from an earlier audition years ago and just said, you know, if I had this role, I think you're really right for it. I'd love you to do it, and I think you'd have a good time. And he didn't have to say much more than that. I was a huge fan of the show at that point. And, it's such an exciting thing to be able to join a show when you're a fan of it. You know, it's such an unusual thing. And the only catch was I was just starting my editing process, and that's the only thing that made me hesitate, that I wanted to be able to, I didn't want to split my focus too much, that sort of both things suffered. So, you know, they were great, and, you know, it was really for a couple of months there, it was when I wasn't in the edit room, I was down in Baltimore shooting, and then back to the edit room, and then back to Baltimore. But mm-hmm. there's something nice about that. It gives you a distance from both things, you know what I mean? You're able to clear your head and get your mind out of it, and being on set was always such a pleasure. By that point, those guys had it down. You know, they just like they were everyone. Those characters were so ingrained. The crew was so great. The writing was so there that it was such a joy to just walk on set, know you're in the hands of pros, and just kick back and do your part. and try to be a part of it and not ruin the show. That was our biggest fear. Our biggest fear, Clark Johnson and I used to joke about that. We're like, man, I hope we don't go down as the guys who ruin The Wire.
Why would you think that, you and Clark?
It's just such a great show, you know? You're like, I don't want to be the guy to screw it up. I don't want to miss the shot at the buzzer. It's like that fourth season was so amazing. And also we knew that David and Bill Sorzi and all those great writers on the show, and Ed, of course, these guys worked in the newspaper business, you know, especially David and Bill. And like, this was their baby. Like, this was, you know, this was something they felt very right about. So we felt, you know, a little bit beholden to try to get it right ourselves for them.
So the character you played, that character was one of the pivotal characters in that season in terms of defining what David and Ed, especially, I guess, in that sense, David was trying to say about where the U.S. press is now. Your character who ended up winning this Pulitzer for a story that he made up, Scott Templeton.
Right.
That must have been a very interesting character for you to get into.
It was great because, you know, part of it is with the writing. I didn't know where it was going.
Uh-huh.
So every time I'd get down to set, you know, I'd usually get down when they're already shooting the next episode, and I went to the makeup trailer, everyone would be like, ooh, boy, wait and see what you do. And I'd be like, uh-oh. It was just fun. It was fun, you know. Clark and I have been friends for a long time, and I've been a fan of his work and just know him personally. And it was fun to kind of, like, go toe-to-toe with him and watch that play out. He called me, actually. He watched the premiere, I think, down in Philly or Baltimore. He was somewhere at some kind of big party. And he's like, just so you know, man, when you got the Pulitzer, the whole room booed. I was like, cool. Job well done. But, yeah, it is funny to play a character that is so disliked, I have to say.
It's good, though. It's good for an actor to play characters that are not liked.
Oh, it's great.
It's the best thing to do.
It's almost better than being the good guy.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. I mean, you can really cut your acting chops on sleazier roles than you can on sweeter roles in some ways.
Oh, I think totally. I mean, it's just such a nice... And to that end, I think it's a great thing about The Wire, right? There wasn't necessarily a good or a bad guy. There were guys that were all sort of conflicted and, like, you know, these guys who you thought were heroes and would do something to undermine that, and I think that's what made that show so human, you know?
So now, between this world of filmmaking, clearly something else is going to bubble up in your head and you're going to start thinking about what you want to do next in the next few years as a director and writer, as a filmmaker, and you're also an actor. So are you split and torn between whether Tom McCarthy wants to become Tom McCarthy the actor or the filmmaker, or remain both?
I like to remain both. I think it's kind of fun, you know. I mean, there's acting is such a wonderful job. It's just a good job,
yep.
You know. You get to go on. You work with Greg. I'm doing a movie right now, doing Tony Gilroy's new movie. He's the guy who did Michael Clayton.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like this great cast, Julia Roberts and Clive Owen and Paul Giamatti and Tom Wilkinson. And, you know, we're going down to shoot in the Bahamas for a week right now. I mean, like, you know, that's not the coal mines. This is a pretty good occupation when you're doing things like that. And it's just a fun script and a great character. And, I'm somewhat morally challenged, which I think I'm going to have to start to reflect upon if these roles keep coming in.
We're hoping that they're not typecasting.
Exactly. I have to say, it was pretty, you see something in my character that makes me write for these roles. I have to say, it's pretty funny doing a press tour for The Visitor because, you know, as we've been rolling The Visitor out all over the country, you know, I walk into these rooms and, you know, if there's one people who tuned into the fifth season, it's reporters. It's newspaper people. They were watching The Wire because most interviews I go into, they don't know, they don't put together me as the director, writer-director, and me as the actor, and I walk in and they kind of like freeze like, uh-oh, it's Templeton. I've had to do a lot of back-talking. Some people were not, you know, it was very funny to see people's faces. You knew when they were Wire fans.
So this in the Visitor, I mean, it's playing in two places in Baltimore now. You know that? It's at the Landmark and at the Rotunda.
Oh, cool.
It was actually jam-packed when we were there the other weekend, last weekend at the Rotunda. It was just filled. It was amazing. I sat with a group of people, and we sat up for three or four hours afterwards just talking about the film. So it was...
Well, that's great to hear. Yeah, it's been doing really, you know... As you said, you never know how these types of movies are going to play.
Right.
They're a little more serious. Yeah, it's got some funny moments, but it's a little bit different. It's not your summer blockbuster, but, you know, it's been playing really well. Our box office has been really great. We keep growing. The word of mouth has been tremendous. And, you know, that's how you heard about it.
Right.
So it's kind of like, that's what we rely on. We rely on people talking about it. And so far, it's been really exciting to watch it kind of get out there.
Well, Tom McCarthy, I appreciate you taking the time here. It's been wonderful to talk to you. And good luck with this film and everything else.
No, thanks a lot. I appreciate the support.
It's been great. Tom McCarthy, good to talk to you. You're listening to a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Jessica Phillips. Our engineer is Andrew Epic. And thanks to Clean Cuts Music and Sound Design for studio space. To hear more and learn more, visit us on the web at www.centerforemergingmedia.com. And for the Center for Emerging Media, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.